Blog Talk Radio.
Gosh, she's being pushy again. All right, all right. Come on in, everybody, to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, and I'm here with...
Let me get a hat up over my eyes. It is I, Dave Binkley, from The Weirdest Really Bad Movie.
Yep. And we continue tipping our caps to our listeners as we present more about hats.
You know, it always amazes my wife. She doesn't really listen to a lot of old radio programs, but the fact that we come up with all these topics, and then she says, well, that doesn't sound very nasty. She said, oh, well, what if it were this and that and that? She goes, ooh, that sounds terrible. So that's great.
That's what we're looking for. Terror, horror, crime, monsters, all kinds of stuff. And hats.
How vicious can a hat be? Well, it can be very vicious, as we found last night, and we'll find out again tonight.
Yeah, we got some greats for you. Not only the Mole Mystery Theater, but a show we've never had here before, and since Dave brought this to my attention by scheduling it for our hat weekend. I did a little reading, and it was quite interesting, especially the gentleman who narrates it.
Right. Flip over to that page. There you go. Here we go. Let's see. Yeah, Nelson Olmsted. Yeah. Interesting how that show went from
Ohio,
Oh, is he? I wasn't sure. Well, maybe he's from Olmsted Falls. Ha! No, kidding. but an interesting show, because here we were in the 1950s, and not a lot of shows were being, in the mid-50s, were being created. This was, I'm pretty sure, on NBC, about the same time as X-1. I mean, you hear some of the same music and, I mean, perhaps some of the same sound effects and such. But basically... it was one guy and sound effects and music telling a story. And I think that's really pretty interesting when you have one guy that can do all that and make it all work.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about Sleep No More when we get to that one. We'll start off with Mole a little bit. But if anyone could come up with a topic it's funny that Mrs. Binkley noticed that, because if anybody could get a topic together, it's Dave Binkley.
Let me look at this, because I know when she asked me last week, and it was flowers and roses. She said, well, that doesn't look bad. Look what we had with that. We had the 12th rose,
no.
Evening primrose, a row of roses. Yeah, you know what? She said, oh, you guys are going soft. I said, listen in.
That's right.
Yep. So it was,
it's only in the head.
And I encourage you, if you did not listen live or in the archive, please go listen to one of my favorite mystery theaters of all time, the very first one I heard, A Row of Roses, that we did a few weeks ago on Everything's Rosie, Eerie House number 279, because it is one of my favorite, and I think one of the scariest mystery theaters, and the very first one I ever heard, and heard it right the very first time they aired it. It's just, I have so many fond memories of that scary story that I just love sharing that. So since it's there, I encourage everybody to go hear it.
It was chillingly good, and a nice surprise for me, because as you know, audience, I'm if you haven't heard these particular stories, I'm right there with you. There's very few of these I've heard before, and each week it's a learning experience for me, and I'm enjoying the heck out of this. I'm enjoying the ride.
Yeah. And I just I just love these great dramas. See, having and again, not really realizing, but having a learning disability with my reading, this was my reading. This was the way I truly enjoyed a good horror story or a science fiction story or something like that. I could read it, but I wouldn't get as much out of it as, say, you would, Dale. But boy, when it was acted out with music and sound effects, this truly, truly is a treasure to me, these stories.
And we brought this up recently, and we'll get more and more and more into this later on, but it really is about good storytelling. And that's what this medium allows for. And much like reading a book, much of it's left to your imagination.
Right. It's something that the television doesn't do and going to the movies doesn't do. They present it all for you. They're still, even with radio, they're still putting it out there, and you still have to figure out in your mind what it all looks like and how it all comes together. That's why radio is indeed the theater of the mind, and I just it has always been intriguing to me, always. And we even have a few surprises coming along tonight. We have a couple of hat songs, one from 1933, one from 1942, and even a brief history on the invention of the hat coming up later tonight. So you really want to stick around for that, because it is you will be schooled in how the hat was invented. So I think you'll want to hear that.
Ah, Shep, good old Chapeau knowledge. It's Chapeau College.
If that's right, if that means made up, you're right. Okay.
Well, yeah. Well, there's that. Now, chilling stories tonight. Mole Mystery Theater. Our first program is Man in the Black Velvet Hat.
Yeah, interesting story. Although it's chilling with the murders, a murder rampage, and a mystery at the same time, trying to find and catch this man in the velvet hat. And I think that it's interesting. I think we touched on a little bit last night. Many of the Mole Mystery Theaters were saved because they were also used in the Mystery Playhouse. I was reading up one thing on there, and somebody actually credited. There's so many that they did as the Mystery Playhouse that they actually credited Peter Lorre as being one of the hosts on it. He was not an actual host on Mole Mystery Theater. But so many of these were saved through the Armed Forces Radio Service, and that site thought he was actually one of their hosts. You can find some of the Inner Sanctums, and Peter, I know at least one Peter Lorre also hosted that, again, a Mystery Playhouse. I know that Howard Duff did some hosting for the Mystery Playhouse, which were actually complete radio programs without their regular open and close. But that's what we have here tonight, thanks to the Armed Forces Radio Service, because without that, this recording would not be here with us.
Yep. This will be a fun one. Do we have a broadcast date for this, John?
We do. December 19th, 1944.
Oh, yes. What happened seemed accidental. The man who opened the elevator door and plunged 10 stories to his death. The hotel fire that reduced 5 people to charred ash. And Edward Turner, who died when his car smashed into a pillar. But why was the same man at the scene of each tragedy? A man in a velvet hat.
Thank you.
Creeps. This is Peter Lorre opening the doors of the Mystery Playhouse. Would you like to hear the story of a mad killer who murdered with one hand while holding the Bible in the other? Sound intriguing, huh? Well, if it does, stay with us for the next 30 minutes as we bring you an exciting mystery tale by Jerome and Harold Prince. These talented brothers have evolved a strange and stirring story that should keep you on the edge of your seats throughout. So settle yourselves in them now as we raise the curtain on The Man in a Velvet Hat.
The beginning, New York City. An office building in the financial district just off Wall Street. Sometime after closing hours, Tuesday night, December 15th. An office Christmas party for out-of-town salesmen. The party is being held on the 19th floor in room 1906.
I'm going straight home to the little woman.
Oh, you.
I love you, kid, but oh, my wife. Well, Merry Christmas, you guys.
Merry Christmas, buddy. Stick with it, boy.
Stick with it, fellas.
Turn the lights off in this corridor. How do you like that? Where's that night bell for that elevator? Where's that elevator? Doorbell indicator. Well, here's the elevator right here. Just open the door and...
Sudden death in an elevator shaft. That was at 11 p.m. Tuesday, December 15th. 9 hours later, 8 a.m. Wednesday, December 16th, a letter is delivered to John Reynolds, ranking New York newspaper columnist.
Here's a screwy letter, Mike. My dear Mr. Reynolds, it was my whim 2 hours ago to take home with me to eternity my son, known in this life as Fred Smith. What do you know about that? Was it signed? No, but look, capital M on my and me. Just as though the guy writing the letter thought that he was God. Hey.
Yeah?
I just think I'll put in a routine check. See if any guy named, Fred Smith was knocked off in the last couple of hours.
The following day, December 17th, at a downtown hotel.
Three alarm!
That's a lousy note, hardly a week before Christmas.
Poor devil. 5 dead, the chief figured. All from some dope who has to smoke cigarettes in bed in a flyer trap flea bag of a hotel.
Mike.
Yeah?
Mike, look. Another letter. Listen. My dear Mr. Reynolds, 5 have been purified by flames and are at peace within my heart.
Hey.
Mike, have you any word of any big fires today?
Why, yeah, there was a 3-alarmer in a hotel downtown, just east of Broadway.
One day later, December 18th, it is night. Second Avenue is wet and slippery with rain. Then...
What happened?
The car, see? Into the cellar!
My dear Mr. Reynolds, in a swift chariot, I have taken Edward Tucker home to glory. No signature. The third in 3 days, and if it's like the others, it's on the beam. This looks like a story.
The following day, December 19th, John Reynolds steps out to investigate.
I'm Reynolds of the New York Dispatch. Is this the building where Fred Smith was killed 4 days ago?
That's right.
Were you on the night elevator the night Smith fell down the shaft?
Yep. Drunk as a coot, he must have been.
Listen to me. On the night that Smith was killed, did you take anybody up to that office Christmas party who didn't belong there? A stranger?
No, sir.
Are you sure?
Sure, I'm sure.
Now, look. See this $50 bill?
$50? Gee.
Go on, take it. It's yours.
Gosh.
Now come clean. Who was the stranger?
Hmm? Oh, maybe you mean the tall guy who came in at a quarter to 11.
That's the one.
I tell him the party's on the 19th floor. He doesn't answer, just nods. So I take him to the 19th and I let him out.
What'd he look like?
Ah, you got me, Mr. Reynolds. I didn't...
You must have seen his hat. What kind of a hat did he wear?
Hmm? Oh, yeah. Black. It was old and fuzzy.
Fuzzy, like old velvet?
If you say so, Mr. Reynolds.
If I say so, no. Was it like velvet?
Okay, Mr. Reynolds, okay. A velvet hat. Yeah, a man in a velvet hat.
You were one of the firemen working in that fire in this hotel. Was there anything suspicious?
Just a guy smoking a cigarette in bed. That's suspicious.
Pure accident. Did you happen to see a man in a black velvet hat hanging around outside the ropes when the fire was blazing?
Black velvet hat?
That's it. Black velvet hat.
It was raining that night. And...
Sure it was.
Yeah. There was a guy.
And he was wearing a black velvet hat. Do you remember, fireman? Do you remember? Madam, they tell me you were a witness to that auto crash down the street last night.
That's right. What about it?
Was anybody else around last night when that car slammed into the pillar?
What if there was?
Look, did you happen to know who the man driving that car was? He was Edward Tucker, who was champion midget auto driver. Now, it wouldn't be easy for him to lose control of his car.
It was wet. It had been raining.
Sure, sure. Now tell me, were there any other witnesses around?
A man.
He must have been wearing a...
Well, a raincoat and a hat.
A hat. What? Do you remember what kind of a hat he was wearing? Was it dark?
Dark? Yeah. Almost black, yeah.
Maybe kind of fuzzy?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, fuzzy. Almost like it was velvet. Yeah, a velvet hat.
And in John Reynolds' column in the New York Dispatch the next morning, December 20th.
3 deaths. 3 accidental deaths. But were they accidental? In every case, an eyewitness tells us of seeing a man in a velvet hat, an apparent madman, a man whose paranoia assumes the form of God's substitution, a man who writes letters claiming the deaths were caused by him. Are the police aware of the reign of this madman? And is the madman lying, or has he done murder? But if murder has been done, and if this man is a murderer, he's a murderer such as the world has never known. Or perhaps such as the world has always known, but never seen. There's no motive for any of his crimes, no evidence of lust or of envy, of passion or of gain. Certainly, if this man is not a god, he has not only successfully adopted the posturing of one, but the psychic attributes as well. Where he walks, death walks. This man may be death himself.
And all New York reads John Reynolds' column and wonders. Then, in the next 3 days, come 3 more deaths, 3 more letters. And 3 more reports in John Reynolds' column telling of eyewitnesses seeing the man in the velvet hat at the scene of each crime. And now comes panic. A great city is hushed and frightened, waiting to see who is the next to die. Then on December 23rd, the climax. It was late afternoon at the office for the police commissioner. Chief Magruder confers with Detective Sergeant Martin.
Well, I haven't much to report, Chief. This is the wackiest case I've seen.
Never mind that. Get to the facts, Martin.
What facts? So we're supposed to find a guy wearing a velvet hat, so we can't find anything. Where he lives, his name, nothing. Just doesn't seem to exist.
Perhaps he doesn't exist.
Well, yeah, well, tell it to New York City. Tell it to the newspapers.
Hello?
Now, look, Chief, don't you think it'd be better if we told the reporters that we've been getting the same letters that this columnist Reynolds has? Let them know we're at least hep to what's going on, huh?
Perhaps you're right.
Chief Magruder. Chief Magruder.
Take it easy, Miss Martin.
But it's happened again. The man in the velvet hat.
What? Where? How? When?
Crowded movie theater. A woman screamed and shouted, "Look out, the man in the velvet hat." And there was a panic.
Panic? Is anybody killed?
16. 16 dead. Maybe more.
16. Good Lord.
Chief Magruder's office. Yes, sir. Just a minute.
Look, Chief, I think I better go
Chief
out.
Chief Magruder, it's the mayor.
The mayor? Martin, you stay here a minute. Yes, Mr. Mayor. How'd you hear about it so fast? Well, I suppose the newspapers will make a big... But I'm doing everything I can. Oh, Reynolds, eh? Well, why should he... Yes, Mr. Mayor. Yes, Mr. Mayor. Goodbye.
What goes, Chief?
Plenty. Whole town is upside down. Relatives are jamming the morgue, trying to identify the dead. The Citizens Committee is planning a mass meeting tomorrow to demand action. Every newspaper in town is roasting the city administration.
What do we do, Chief?
You? You do nothing till you hear from me. Miss Myers, my hat.
Where are you going?
To the mayor's office. The mayor and I and that columnist Reynolds are going to have a little conference.
Reynolds?
Yeah. The mayor seems to think Reynolds knows more about this thing than the police department.
Answer me this, Magruder. Answer me this. Has there been a murder? Are these accidents murders?
Maybe there aren't any murders, Mr. Mayor. Not in the ordinary sense.
I believe there is, Magruder.
Just a minute, Reynolds. Your Honor, except for the panic at the movie house, every death was accidental or natural as sure as we three are in this room.
What do you mean? What about the man in the velvet hat?
Put the screws on some of the people who say they saw him and he'd disappear like that.
Forget it. To the people of this town, he's real. And this panic, cold panic, right in the middle of the holidays. The people are scared blue.
May I say something, Mr. Mayor?
Well, certainly. That's why you're here.
Look, the way I see it, either it's all a hoax or there is a man in a velvet hat.
That's right. So either prove the hoax or catch the man.
All right. All right. I think we can do one or the other. If Reynolds will help.
Well, certainly I'll help. How?
I'm going to challenge the man in the velvet hat, and Reynolds is going to publish that challenge. I'm going to say I don't think he's a god. I'm going to say I don't even think he's a good criminal. Anybody can boast of a murder after it's happened, but only a master criminal can boast of a murder before it's happened and get away with it. I'm going to challenge him to name his next murder before it happens. And Reynolds will publish my challenge.
Okay, Magruder. But I predict that he'll accept your challenge and that when he does, you will not catch him.
And in his newspaper column, December 24th, John Reynolds says...
A challenge. From the police commissioner of New York City to the man in the velvet hat. Quote... I challenge you to prove that you were a criminal. I think you're a fraud. If you're not a fraud, you will announce in advance the time and place of your next killing, murder, mercy, death, whatever you call it. Unquote.
Who is the man in the hat? Maybe Reynolds can wrap it up. We'll find out in just a little while.
You know, you really shouldn't challenge a murderer to make more murder, you know?
No, probably not.
This isn't a real smart idea.
It makes for a good story, though.
Well, it does. It does, you know? Yeah, but if you're going to trap somebody in a certain area, try and trap somebody in a certain area... Yeah, you better be careful because it could be a little bigger area than you think.
I can see some potential lawsuit action there. This could not end well, possibly.
Yeah, but like you said, it does make a good story and interesting. It is an interesting challenge. Interesting that the. Of course, Jack the Ripper sent his things to newspapers as well as to the police. From what I'm hearing here, it only seems to be one newspaper that he's sending it to. But You know, I mean, it could have been one of those one newspaper towns. I'm not sure. Now we're lucky to have one newspaper towns sometimes, I think.
Yeah.
But
Print is dead.
Jeez, our own paper here is even printed here.
From social media. Oh, God. What have you done?
Boy, that's a scary thought. That's a scary thought, indeed.
Oh, my. Yep. Hats.
So are we? Are,
creepy, though.
Are we social media, Dale?
I guess we are.
Oh man, we are in trouble.
But we're not the evil kind. just drink the Kool-Aid. Everything will be fine. No. No, hats can be creepy, though. I was thinking, too, yes, the man had a very, very unique fat face, but Rondo Hatton as the Creeper had that great hat that he wore at night to cover as much of his face as he could.
Exactly. And you know, the thing, I think the scariest thing about hats, especially in stories like that, not necessarily like this, because you really haven't seen the guy yet or heard of seeing the guy, is that it does cover so much of the face. It adds to the mystery of the person as well, because the hat is covering so much of the face, down over the eyes and things like that. So.
Yeah.
Depending how you cloak around it, you know, like the shadow did, there'd be almost nothing to see.
Well, that's why I always wore a hat on Spook Show to cover my ugly mug.
But at least we still both have hair, Dale. I have a lot of friends that don't, so.
Yeah, that's true.
That's one thing we're not hiding. Of course, mine is pretty much gray now, but, you know, hey, it is what it is, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and I just think of but Dave, you know that about 4 months ago I had a lot more hair than I have now.
I also know that it will be back.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yes, it shall. And I can stuff it under a hat, like the velvet hat we're listening to tonight, the man in the velvet hat from Mole
yes.
Mystery Theater. It was such a thrill to hear Peter Lorre at the very beginning.
Yep, and he will be back at the very end, I believe. So
excellent, and let's listen to part two then of The Man in the Velvet Hat.
Hello, this is Reynolds of the Dispatch. Give me the commissioner, please hurry.
Well, just a minute, Mr. Reynolds. Hold on.
Yeah?
Magruder? Reynolds.
Yeah, Reynolds.
I got an answer from the man in the velvet hat.
You got... What did he say?
He says at precisely 9 o'clock p.m. on Christmas Eve, a man will die poisoned in front of the Times building on Times Square. He says, quote, "After this, I will move again in silence, for only those without faith need signs." That's all.
9 o'clock Christmas Eve in front of the Times building by poison.
That's what he says.
Okay.
Thanks. What time is it now?
It's 4 minutes till 9, Chief.
4 minutes, huh?
It's darn cold out here. Why do they keep playing that same tune all the time? That was popular 2 years ago. Did they write any new Christmas songs?
It's a good song.
Stop chattering each other, both of you guys. Tell your nerves to lie down.
Oh, my nerves are all laying down and purring.
All right, then, shut up. Keep your eyes on your watch. Now, let's see. Simon and Thompson in front of the Times building. Burke and LaMantia in the lobby.
Rowan over there across the street on 7th Avenue and the whole homicide squad scattered all over the theatrical district. All right, I'd like to have doubled the number of guys standing around just in case.
Now, what's your nerves need to lie down, Chief?
Precisely at 9 o'clock on Christmas Eve, a man will die poisoned in front of the Times building.
Hey, Chief, where is the front of the Times building? Where we are here in Times Square, or maybe is it a block back there on 42nd Street?
After this, I will move again in silence. For only those without faith need signs. Martin.
Yeah?
You got a good reason why he didn't type out his last note on a typewriter like he usually does? Why does he have to write this one in that Bible lettering?
Search me.
Maybe he's God. Maybe he likes to write like the Bible.
Yeah, and maybe I'll break you and send you out to pound a pea on Staten Island. How much time, Martin?
Less than 30 seconds if the guy is prompt and keeping his appointments.
Hey, Chief.
Huh?
Look at that guy. See?
Which guy?
Standing over there on a curb on 7th Avenue.
Guy has no hat on. He's got no coat on it. Carrying his coat under his arm.
On a night like this, he's qualifying for the booby hatch.
Here he comes. Watch him. He's coming through those cars. Keep your eye on him.
He's coming right at us.
Glory, hallelujah!
He stopped, yeah. Hey! Hey, look at him. What's he doing? Swallowing poison, you fool! Grab him, quick!
Stop that guy!
Keep the crowd away. Keep him away.
Dead as a doornail, Chief.
Yeah, isn't he, though?
Here's his coat, Chief. It's a brown raincoat, inside out. Look, look at it.
Something in his pocket, huh?
Well, I'll be... It's a velvet hat.
Hey, Chief.
Yeah?
Here. Simon picked it up. Said he dropped it on the sidewalk just before he drank a poison.
Give me it. The letter.
His last.
Let those without faith disbelieve now.
You're quite a hero today, Chief Magruder.
Hero, eh?
Here's John Reynolds' column. Did you read it?
No, let's see it. The people of New York City owe a vote of thanks to their police commissioner for his effective... That's right. As for the man in the velvet hat, he was clearly a religious fanatic. There were never any crimes. There were merely accidents. Then the man in the velvet hat sent his letters to both the police commissioner and your columnist, attempting to say he had caused these accidents. Finally, when challenged by Magruder to prove his existence, he poisoned himself rather than admit he was not possessed with supernatural powers. Nice open and shut case, eh, Miss Myers?
Yes, sir. Oh, incidentally, the mayor wants you to call him. He wants to thank you personally.
The devil with the mayor. Get that columnist, John Reynolds, on the phone. Tell him to get over here right away. I want to talk to him.
It was a queer case, Magruder, wasn't it? Not really knowing?
Yeah.
You know, I had the right hunch from the beginning. Kept it to myself, though. You know, it's an interesting study, lunacy.
You think so?
The funny thing, though, about the lunatic... I mean, you never did find out who he really was, did you?
Now, look here, Reynolds. I had you pegged from the start.
What do you mean you had me pegged from the start?
You heard me.
Now look here, Magruder... Are you implying the man in the velvet hat and I were working together?
No. There never was a man in a velvet hat. You wrote those letters yourself.
I wrote... Why should I? What motive could I have?
Plenty. You write a newspaper column, don't you? You gotta keep it filled and get it read, don't you? Now look, I'm an old-fashioned cop, Reynolds. I ask myself, who gains? In this case, you did. You created the man in the velvet hat out of whole cloth. You wrote his letters and mailed them to me. And through coercion, bribery, or suggestion, you convinced a lot of witnesses they actually saw this phantom at the scene of each accident.
This is a gag, a rib. You can't be serious.
And maybe we found the typewriters you wrote the letters on, and maybe we didn't. You can be sure that if we haven't, we will.
It's a beautiful theory, Magruder. But spoiled by an ugly fact. There was a man in a velvet hat. And you haven't. Dead.
No, Reynolds. There wasn't any man in a velvet hat.
What?
How do you know?
Because the man we found dead, the man who took his life in front of the Times building, was released from an insane asylum only one day before you published my challenge. He couldn't have been the man in the velvet hat all those other times, not while he was in the asylum.
Now look, Magruder, don't let your theory run away with your head. You know darn well...
Don't tell me what I know darn well. You wrote that biblical script. Then you got this poor fellow who killed himself on Times Square. You took advantage of his insanity to coerce him, cajole him, persuade him in some way to do what he did.
You're out of your mind.
Chief, excuse me.
What do you want, Kacharski?
Well, Chief, here's the guy we're looking for. Second-hand typewriter store, man, in Brooklyn.
That's the man. That's him. That's the man.
What are you talking about? You're crazy.
I tell you, 7 or 8 times he comes into my store, types something out, each time on a different typewriter. Always letters, says he's trying them out.
The man's lying. He never saw me.
That's the man, all right. I remember him. That's
okay, okay. Calm down. All right, Reynolds. What have you got to say now?
Now, listen, Magruder, listen to me. When I began this whole thing, I never dreamed...
Dreamed it would cause the death of 16 people in a crowded theater. And the insane man you persuaded to take poison. That was murder, too, Reynolds.
Murder? Well, they'll electrocute. Magruder, you're the only one that knows. You can hush this up. Give me a break, will you? Well, what do you say? Look, I've got money. I'll make you a rich man. What do you say, Magruder? What do you say?
I say you're gonna burn, Reynolds. You're gonna burn.
There, my friends. We have the ingenious solution to tonight's Mystery Playhouse performance, The Man in a Velvet Hat. And the moral? Don't make up a man who wasn't there. You might end up in the electric chair. Pardon me, please. The creep who writes this stuff twisted my arm. Well, we've just got time to look in on a green room where our players are rehearsing the next bedtime story. Follow me, please. Come. Come, come.
Get hold of yourself, Geraldine.
I can't help it, Doctor. You see, it starts every night, about this time.
What starts?
Music. David's last composition. I hear it being played on a piano. And the notes seem to come from the old house, the house where David died in the fire.
Well, perhaps someone is playing that piece on the piano. Someone on the island.
No. No, there's only one other house out here, and those people are away. And the dog. The dog keeps howling all night long.
What dog?
I don't know. There's no dog on the island, but David and I did have a dog. Remember? He stayed with David the night of the fire. He died with him because David was too ill to get out of bed. There! There it is again!
Amazing. That's a real dog. Somewhere on this island.
Oh! You think so?
Why, of course. Probably some stray got across the bridge or swam over from the shore.
Well, you see, Oh, excuse me, Doctor.
Sir.
Hello?
Hello. This is Geraldine Reeves.
Yes, speaking. Who is this?
Listen.
Good heavens! Same music. I heard it again.
What?
Over the phone. Someone's playing it on the piano.
It must be some sort of a prank.
No, a man spoke to me. He said I have 4 hours to live.
4 hours to... Here. Let me have that phone.
No, it's no use. He's rung off.
Well, we might be able to trace the call. Hello. Operator. Operator.
They're trying to kill me.
Hello, operator. Operator.
What's wrong, Doctor?
I'm afraid the wires have been cut. You'd better get into my car and drive into town right away.
Yes. Yes, it isn't safe for me to stay here another minute.
Ah! motor won't turn over. Somebody must have meddled with this car while we were in the house.
Well, try my car, Doctor.
I think perhaps I'd better. Is it in the garage?
Yes, Great heavens, it's gone. The garage is empty. The car's been stolen.
Now, let's not lose our heads, Geraldine. We're not completely cut off yet. We can't use a car. We can still walk.
But it's almost a mile to the bridge, and the road is so dark down along the water.
It won't be too dark with a flashlight. We can go down through the woods to the edge of the water and walk along the shore.
Oh, wait a minute.
What's the matter?
I just remembered. David's brother's driving out here tonight.
Harvey?
Yes, and his wife, Laura. They said they'd be here by 8:30, and if we wait for them, they can take us back in their car. What do you think, Doctor?
That's safer than trying to make it alone. If we wait right here, perhaps we can watch the bridge and see them coming. Heaven's sake, Geraldine. What are you staring at?
The bridge, Doctor. The bridge, look. This end of it's been washed out.
Something peculiar going on here, don't you think? I think that woman has good reason to be worried, too. Sounds to me like the beginning of just the kind of story we like around here. Nice and creepy, huh? Why, you'll have to wait until next time for the whole thing. That old scare master of ceremonies, that gory goon of the inner sanctum, Raymond, will be on hand. So you'll be here too, huh? Won't you? When Raymond, the giggling ghoul, tells you the spine-tingling tale. Voice on a wire. This is Peter Lorre, closing the doors of the Mystery Playhouse. Good night. Sleep tight. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.
Talking about, said, man, you get a preview on there, and a preview is like 7 minutes. It wasn't 7 minutes, but I understand what he's talking about. I couldn't understand why it was such a long preview. Now, remember, this was originally a Mole Mystery Theater. They chopped off the beginning, they chopped off the end, and they cut out all the commercials. That left you with a big chunk of time. Sometimes they just filled it in with music. In this particular case, they filled it in with a clip from the next show, and it sounded like the next show was an Inner Sanctum mystery, just from the organ and all that was happening. I'm thinking that would be what the next, the voice on the wire, I think may have been Inner Sanctum. So, but that's kind of the reason for the lengthy preview for the next show.
Yeah.
Although there is
I'm pretty sure you're right, Dave. Dave, I'm pretty sure you're right. It was Inner Sanctum because Peter had referenced Inner Sanctum and his friend, that creepy Raymond.
Ah, there you are. And so, and you know what? So that gives that reason, and it also gives reason for us to learn a little something from that episode as well.
If we must. And now, Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story, as related by me. With
the apology cigar. The responsibility of reaction is always a happy one. It was not for the girl itself. It was simply for the presenter.
A little quick on the flusher there, John. Hey, since we're in an educational phase of the program, perhaps it is now time I should give an oral history, the unofficial history of the hat.
Ah.
If you don't mind. Here we are. Yeah. Disclaimer. Disclaimer, Erie House Radio makes no claims that any of this stuff is true, but it sounds good to Dave, so what the heck. Here we go. The very first hat was invented in 3 million B.C. Actually, most people don't know this, but B.C. stood for before caps. So the first hat was invented 3 million years before caps, but I digress. The first hat was invented by Ugg the caveman. Ugg was a very creative guy. He invented the first fishing hook. Unfortunately, no one had invented fishing line yet, so he rarely gets credit for making that. Instead, he strung it through a weed and invented the first necklace. Unfortunately, the weed he used was poison ivy and was darn near ruined by the lawsuits that followed. Now, Ugg loved being outside, and he hated being rained on. At first, he invented the raincoat, but he constantly got beat up by other cavemen because he kept opening his coat in front of cave women to demonstrate how dry he was. Tiring of getting beat up, he began to wonder about putting something on his head to cover it from being rained on. So he began to fashion a hat out of materials available to him. Unfortunately, the big rocks were the most readily available to him, so he fashioned hats out of rocks. The hats were so heavy that three cave women suffered broken necks during his first hat fashion show. At this point, the other cavemen were tired and afraid of Ugg's inventions and banished him to the Valley of the Saber-Toothed Tigers. At least here, Ugg could invent and perfect his inventions to his heart's delight. On his way to the Valley of Sabertooth, Ugg shouted a vow that this would not be the last they heard of him. But on the second day there, he ran across a saber-toothed tiger who forgot his pack lunch, so he ate Ugg instead, and it was indeed the last time they heard from Ugg. End of story.
Oh, that's that ending. Poor Ugg. Crazy hat.
There you go.
Oh, my goodness. That was getting so good, I had to give you a musical bed, Dave. I mean,
I see. Oh, my. That was just a little piece of history I sunk up out of my head that I had to share this afternoon that I had to share with everybody.
Yep. And we're getting into this tradition now of bringing you more and more songs, too, gang. So before we get to Sleep No More, Dave brought us a little something here. I'm guessing it has something to do with World War II. It's a song called Hats Off to MacArthur.
Absolutely. From 1942. I think that's when MacArthur made his great claim, I shall return, when he was run out of the Philippines.
Let's take a listen.
the West Coast, there's a new cry in the air. Hats off to MacArthur and our boys down there. From the stoker to the broker, they are shouting everywhere. Hats off to MacArthur and our boys down there. He's a Yankee through and through, and he has a job to do. He'll do it for the red, white, and blue. From the highways and the byways, there's a new cry in the air. Hats off to MacArthur and our boys down there. Yankee through and through, and he has a job to do. He'll do it for the red, white, and blue. From the highways and the byways, there's a new cry in the air. Hats off to MacArthur and our boys down there.
Definitely a salute to a great American general from World War II. Kind of a troublemaker, but my kind of guy.
He was a bit of a troublemaker and a pain in the butt to Harry Truman, that's for sure. You know,
yes.
I guess when he gave his basically Harry Truman finally fired him, and when he gave his farewell, he did it to the. To the Congress, and it was shown on television. And I guess Harry Truman put his foot through the television when that happened. Yeah.
So a little something here from RadioHorrorHosts.com about our next show, Sleep No More, hosted by Nelson Olmsted. Ran from 1952 to 1956. It began as a 15-minute series, Dave, but in November of 56, it expanded to 30 minutes.
Yeah, but you know, when it went to 30 minutes, it essentially was the same thing because the 15-minute was based on one story. The 30-minute took two stories and did two 15-minute stories or two 12-minute stories with an open and close and all that fun stuff in between. But it was essentially the same format, except they had two stories in half an hour instead of one story in 15 minutes.
Yep. And RadioHorrorHost.com are impressed with Nelson Olmsted and his ability to do all the voicing of all the characters, much like our friend Joe Bev. Hope he's feeling better. Well, our friends are really feeling good. This is not fun.
There's one other show that I will, I guess, compare this to. Herbert Marshall did a suspense. He did it at least a couple of times, called The Waxworks. Wonderful, scary story. It's on our schedule for down the road here. In that story, he did all the different voice characterizations, and again with minimal sound effects and music behind him, he carried the entire broadcast by himself. That's what we're going to hear right here tonight, too.
This guy's something, Dave. It's according to the Digital Deli, Olmsted contracted with Ohio Bell and the state of Ohio to narrate a series of vignettes about Ohio history, titled The Ohio Story, running in three installments a week from 1952 to 57, right around the same time Sleep No More was running.
Right. Yes.
So he may not be from Ohio, but yeah, pretty cool.
And he is quite good at changing characters. And you know what? I think I've done a little of that, which is why I usually drug people into the studio, you know, and why my friends would avoid me on Tuesday nights, because it was, you know, when I was taping our old weirdness radio. But there are times that you did have to end up doing one voice right into the next voice, and it is an art. People like Stan Freberg did it so well, and other actors and voice actors, they were absolutely amazing how they could do that. Mine was not quite so amazing, but I got by.
And if you like a guy who can do a lot of voices, go back and listen to Joe Bev and then search him out. The guy's very talented, and he too can just change his voice so many different ways.
He can, yes. It is amazing.
So
it looks like this might be
I was just going to
give you a broadcast for it for December 5th, 1956.
We'll be back.
In just a moment, Sleep No More. But first,
Summertime. Sounds like Charlie Spivak. Oh, yes, NBC Bandstand. Burt Park, Vaughn Monroe, Freddie Martin this week. Sure helps the morning along. Well, that finishes the dishes. Now, let's see. Better get some shopping done. I can listen to NBC Bandstand in the car.
Anywhere, everywhere, it's NBC Bandstand. And now stay tuned for Sleep No More on NBC. This is Nelson Olmsted. Sleep No More. Sleep No More. Turn down the lights. Sink back in your chair and don't look into the shadows. In the shadows, there may be moving things. Tonight, it may be, you will sleep no more. Good evening. This is Ben Grauer introducing tonight's tale of terror, told by Nelson Olmsted on the National Broadcasting Company's presentation of Sleep No More. The story of terror can be as simple as a sheeted ghost rattling chains. It can be a complex and hidden world of horror, lurking in such unholy dimensions as only the dead and the moonstruck can glimpse. Or it can be those terrible, fathomless shadows which lie buried deep in the primitive mind of civilized man. And for this evening, well, Nelson Olmsted, tell us about this evening's story. Number two is a haunting narrative about the very unusual Man in the Black Hat. I had my money in the black and the stock market stopped on red, so after holding me upside down and shaking the last dime out of my pocket, they turned me loose. San Francisco isn't such a bad place to be broke in. You walk around and look at things and you forget your troubles. This day I was walking along Van Ness Avenue. Second-hand dealers had cars parked halfway across the sidewalk. Signs on the windshield said, "This car for $100, this car for only $25 down," and I laughed to myself thinking how I was broke and couldn't even buy gasoline for a motorcycle. Still, I read the signs and wondered which car I'd buy in case I had the money. And all of a sudden, I noticed a sign that didn't make sense. It said, "This car free. Inquire upstairs, room 402. Other people glanced at the sign and kept on going. They figured it was some kind of advertising gag. Well, so did I, but I didn't have anything else to do, so I stuck around looking at the sign. It was on a brand new luxury 12 you couldn't touch for less than $4,000. Well, I'm curious, like all other gamblers, and I walked up a flight of stairs and knocked on the door of 402. Somebody told me to come in. I stepped inside, and a small man with a gray goatee raised his head. He wore a black hat of soft felt, like I used to wear when the horses ran right or the stock market chart didn't look like a cross-cut saw. And I said, "Are you the fellow that put the sign on the luxury 12 downstairs?" And he said, "Yes." "Well, what's the gag?" "No gag at all." He was looking at me out of eyes that didn't see me. They were solid gray, no iris or anything, just gray. Oh, they gave me the willies. I said, "Well, then, in that case, I'll take it, if you don't mind." "Not at all." And he handed me a pink slip already signed. "Well, what else is there to this?" "Nothing." "Thank you." I couldn't think of anything else to say. Don't mention it. Then I wasn't there anymore. I mean, I was standing in the room, but so far as he was concerned, I was a million miles away. He ignored me so completely, I felt I wasn't there myself. And I left. Well, the key was in the car, and I backed it over the curb and drove it to the luxury agency. And after a lot of haggling, they gave me $2,400 cash for the car. I took the money and played the stock market again. And this time I played the red, and I couldn't lose. The old man had changed my luck. The funny thing was, nothing seemed strange to me. Oh, I'd make words with my mouth and tell myself that the old man wasn't real and that the goofiest thing that ever happened was me getting a car for nothing like that. But the words didn't mean anything. Something inside me took the whole business for granted. I took my winnings and bought a trip for myself. I went down to Florida and cleaned up a few thousand shooting dice and betting in the races. And after that, I went to New York. One night, I turned a corner and almost bumped into the old man. I wasn't surprised, and I knew it. It seemed perfectly natural to see him, except that he was broke. I could see he was. And I said, "Hello, remember me?" His gray eyes turned toward me with about as much expression as marbles. "Certainly," he said. "How are you?"
"Well, it's Jake, it's Jamaica Ginger. You mind walking a ways with me?"
He fell into step with me, and I led him around the corner to where my car was parked. It was a $5,000 Imperial I'd bought a couple of days before, and I said, "This car is free." His eyes didn't show any feeling, but his lips smiled a little, and he said, "What's the gag?"
"No gag at all."
"Then, in that case, I'll take it if you don't mind."
"Not at all," I said.
And I took the pink slip out of my wallet and held it against the windshield while I signed my name, and I handed it to him, and he said, "Thanks."
"Don't mention it."
And he got in the car and drove away. Three months later, I was in Monte Carlo. Oh, I did pretty good for a while. And then the little ball started ducking my numbers and colors, and I lost steadily for 3 weeks. And finally, I stood at the table and watched the croupier rake in my last franc note. I turned away, trying to grin, but it felt like a fuzzy worm was crawling around in my stomach. It's one thing to be broke in the States, but another to be broke in a foreign port. The worm tasted of quinine. Somebody tapped me on the shoulder. The old man, black hat, gray goatee, and expressionless eyes, was standing there. I didn't feel a bit surprised, not a bit. It seemed I'd been expecting him, and he said, "You dropped something?" He held out a roll of notes to me. "Well, careless of me to drop something I didn't know I had, wasn't it?" "Quite," he said. I took the notes.
Thanks.
"Don't mention it. And if I were you, I'd play the black 13 and 9. All of a sudden, he was gone. I played the black 13 and 9, and I played them heavy and won heavy. I walked away from the table with enough money to last me a year, and I don't live in second-class hotels. I didn't think about the old man. I was afraid to. You look at the stars, and you don't think about them, and they're beautiful. You look at them and try and figure out how come they buzz around and never bump into each other, and pretty soon they get you locked up. That's the way I felt about the old man. If I took him for granted, he was just a quiet old fellow with a gray goatee, a black hat, and funny eyes. If I started figuring out how come, I'd go out of my mind.
I took my winnings and went to Paris and got bored. I wondered why I'd come. And then I knew. It was in what they call a Latin Quarter. A mob had gathered on the sidewalk. In the middle was a gendarme. He had the old man by the collar. His black hat was mashed and his goatee was mussed, but his eyes were expressionless. It seems the old man just walked up to a fellow in a high silk hat, pulled out a gun, and let him have it. They said the guy in the silk hat was a government official. Well, the next day I went to the American consul. He's an American, I said. You got to do something. He agreed to investigate. The next day he reported, well, I don't even know that he is an American. He says he hasn't any nationality. Even if he were an American, I couldn't do anything. He admits he killed a deputy. But why? I asked. The consul shrugged like a Frenchman. He says he didn't have a reason. That's all the police can get out of him, except that he didn't know the man he killed, hadn't seen him before, and hadn't even heard of him. Well, the thing didn't surprise me. The old man gave away an automobile to a stranger for no reason whatsoever. Why shouldn't he kill a stranger for the same reason? That added up. It made sense, but I couldn't get anybody to see it. They listened to my story and threatened to have me thrown in jail, too. I didn't know what to do. They wouldn't let me see the old man. They said he claimed he didn't know me and didn't want to see me anyway. I don't know if they were telling the truth. I suppose they were. I had to give up. I hung around Paris for 3 months and then caught a boat for home. I went down to the bar and ordered a whiskey sour as we left the dock. And just as I finished it, the old man in the black hat appeared again, and he said, have one on me. Now, if you put your finger in boiling water, you'll get scalded. But if you put it in molten metal that's 100 times hotter, you don't feel anything. Surprises that way. If I'd seen anything that was merely terrifying, I would have shrieked like a woman. But I saw the man in the black hat, and I was calm. Maybe I was too stunned to be frightened or alarmed. Anyway, I spoke calmly. You were being taken to jail the last time I saw you. I escaped. What will it be? Whiskey sour. How did you manage it? 2 whiskey sours. Why, I just walked away from there. I took my drink and I started to lift it to my lips. And then I set it down carefully so as it wouldn't spill. And I said, now look here. This can't go on forever, you know. One of us is out of our mind. And if it's a tie, I don't like it. Now, his head was turned half away from me, but his gray marble eyes swung around and stared into mine. And he shrugged and his eyebrows lifted. Is something the matter? Good Lord! Something? Well, they executed you. They cut your head off with a guillotine. Yes, I read it in the papers. That's their notion of it. Have another. Give me the bottle. I took a drink and kept my hand on the bottle. He took it from me and poured himself a drink, and he tossed it down without taking his eyes off me. They did execute you. They cut your head off and you died. I know they did. Now, don't tell me they didn't. All right. Have it your own way. I took another drink, and I thought a while, and then I gripped the bar with both hands, and I said, all right, I'm ready. I've got to know sooner or later, so let's have it. Who are you? Don't you know? I'm asking. All right. I'll tell you. A drunk came by and lost his balance, and he threw his arms around me and almost dragged me down. And when I got rid of him, the man in the black hat was gone. I couldn't find him anywhere in the boat. I'm in the United States now. I keep traveling around, but I know it isn't going to do me any good. Someday, someplace, I'm going to meet the man in the black hat again. And I know he'll tell me who he is. And I don't want to be told.
Can turn up the lights now. You can look around you. Nobody is there, really. Everything is all right, isn't it? Step over here, Nelson Olmsted, and tell us about next week's story.
Well, next week, Ben, we have a story of breathtaking suspense by a past master of it. It's called 3 o'clock. Its author is William Irish. You'd better be there.
You have been listening to Sleep No More, an NBC Radio Network production directed by Kenneth McGregor. Mr. Olmsted's albums are recorded exclusively for Vanguard Records. Until next week, when Nelson Olmsted will again be here in person, this is Ben Grauer bidding you good night.
Our life expectancy average could be even more impressive than it is if it weren't for the high accident rate on our nation's highways. Would you be willing to drive carefully so today's children will have a better chance to live out the long life medical science has made possible?
Oops.
Yeah, that reminded me last Sunday. I had to work, so I was heading into work. It was about 7 a.m. Driving along 65. It's actually only a 55-mile-an-hour zone there. And this guy came through, had to be barreling through 85, 90 miles an hour on a Sunday morning. I'm thinking, that was, what is the hurry there? I don't understand the pace of which we push our cars to this day and age.
Well, and push ourselves as well, Dave. I mean, sometimes we're in a hurry to wait.
Yeah, you're right. We get there, so, you know, either you need to leave 10 minutes earlier or 5 minutes earlier, or you know, and then you wait once you get there. It just doesn't make – hurry up and wait doesn't make a great deal of sense.
Pay attention, U.S. military.
Yep.
Well, actually, I first heard the expression hurry up and wait, and it was applicable, especially during basic training. They'd have you march full speed, running and jogging, and to go to a class, and you get there, and you waited for several hours. Glad we ran. Thanks a lot.
That was just to get you guys conditioned.
Yeah, it worked for a little while. very little while.
I bet you were a hoot in the Army, Dale. I bet you were. You probably drove your sergeant nuts, or he loved you because you entertained him the way that you could.
But that was, that was really a chilling story. I am so glad you brought Sleep No More to Erie House Radio. That's the first time we've heard that series here.
Yeah, and they do have a wonderful variety of stories. And although this was a two-part story, I just played the story that was applicable to the our program tonight. And I think that we'll work on getting some more of these snuck in there. So, wonderful stories. And his voice characterizations were wonderful.
That they were, and we learned, we may learn a little something here, Dave.
Well, I hope you got it, because I don't.
Heaven help us. Erie House Radio. Proudly presents. Hey, Garless, moral of the story. Be careful of who or what you chase, because like a dog, you may not know what to do with it when you catch it.
Ah, there you go.
With apologies to dogs.
Okay, I think it's coming out now.
Dust off that moral. All right.
Yeah. No, it's been interesting. Never did I originally think that we'd have a whole weekend of hats to share with people. And I think we've got one more song. No, I think we've got one more song in there. If I am not mistaken, comes from 1933. And it's a little bit about politeness and what you should do when a lady comes by, I think, something like that.
To hear that, a little fun.
And now you can put your hat. Put your hat back. As you say, now we can put our hats back on because ladies walk by.
There we go.
Hey Dale, I have found a list here of the 12 most iconic hats in movie history. I don't think these are necessarily anything in a particular order, but these are the 12. That this person, this blog has made, feels are the 12 most iconic hats in movie history. And first one is listed as Indiana Jones Fedora. So that is one there. There's no argument with there.
Yep. I just want to go along with that.
Here's the Cat in the Hat's top hat. In the Cat in the Hat, of course, The Cat in the Hat and the books and the cartoons and all. I was never really crazy with the Mike Myers Cat in the Hat movie, but the hat is certainly interesting. Another of the 12 most iconic hats, the Mad Hatter's top hat in Alice in Wonderland. We'll slide down here.
More of the Johnny Depp hat. Both of those are interesting.
Yes. Yeah. The next one, Freddy Krueger's fedora from Nightmare on Elm Street series.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, going without saying, the Blues Brothers fedoras. And, you know, those are, you know, fedoras, they're very popular in the movies there. How about the sorting hat from the Harry Potter movies?
Oh, yep, you got that too. Yeah.
And here's Oddjob's bowler from Goldfinger.
Oh, yeah. He used to fling that thing.
You know, and you want to add bowlers in there, I think you'd have to add that to Laurel and Hardy with their bowlers.
Oh,
that's
definitely
not listed here. But...
quite iconic hats with those boys.
And to show they can go back in time, you've got Sherlock Holmes' deerstalker cap from the Sherlock Holmes movies with Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce.
Ah, yeah, lest we forget.
Let's see. We have Alex DeLarge's derby from A Clockwork Orange. And also Anger's top hat in The Prestige. Ah, you know what? This may be the most iconic. Of course, there. I thought of one that is, I think it's the last one listed. Charlie Chaplin's bowler, especially his bowler, his tramp. Little tramp bowler. And I thought of that Buster Keaton hat that's kind of flat that he puts on. You know, that one wasn't listed, but that would be an iconic hat that wasn't listed.
Oh, my daughter loves Buster Keaton. I bought her a Buster Keaton hat. She wanted one really bad.
Did you then?
And I found one.
Yep. Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, Buster Keaton was quite. And quite a, and if nothing else, an athletic actor, but he was truly, some of the things he did put down on film, especially for the day and the effects that they had or didn't have. I just thought, you know, going back and looking at his films are just, they're just absolutely amazing.
All the stunts he did were just incredible. Arranging a building to collapse and the open window falls where he's standing, that takes a lot of nerve and a lot of careful planning.
It does. When he filmed that, actually, he was going through his divorce, and he said he actually didn't care if the house landed on him or not. And the way that fell down, you know, it could have very easily hit him. Even if he cleared the window, it still could have hit him. I mean, wow.
Pretty amazing, but there were no unions back then, so a lot more.
Yep,
cool.
And he was the boss too.
Cool.
Yep. So many of those wonderful films of the silent era. And what's funny is how long it took Chaplin to actually go sound. Because he felt he would lose his international audience by going sound. But he made very, very few sound pictures. He did, like, I'm thinking, although modern times was sound, it was just music. I think of actual sound and using, and he was quite vocal. He was quite a vocal person. I think he did... four at most, five films is all that Charlie Chaplin did. There was some, he had a lot of time in between each one. So it just,
he did. And of course, you know, he had the legal troubles and things too with, let's not get into details, but he had legal issues, so he was out of this country quite a bit, especially later on. But you know, he was really popular in France, as was Jerry Lewis, and I wonder what it is about the French. They really like their comics to be able to do mime work. You know what I mean? As both Lewis and and he could do. Both of them.
You know, it's easy. They're the first to surrender, so they gave up.
Yeah, I guess.
Sorry. But, you know, it does, you know, I understand Jerry Lewis did some really good stuff. But for him to be hailed as a national hero in France, I just truly don't understand that. Because I don't
get it.
I like Jerry Lewis, and some of his stuff is really good, and some of his stuff is okay. He was, I think, either really a really good hit, or to me, he was either a really good hit, spot on, the whole thing was good, or the whole thing was just kind of blah to me. So, that's why I thought it was interesting when he did the King of Comedy, where he was a talk show host who had been kidnapped. It was up by Robert De Niro. I thought that was interesting because basically he played a character.
Yeah.
Yes. And in that, he basically played himself. Not that he was a talk show host, but the fact that the type of character, obnoxious and all, which I really felt at times he really kind of was. What happened was with Jerry, I think he started believing the press that was written about him. And that...
I think he did.
That
ruined
so many things. Yeah.
Too bad, because he was very talented.
He was indeed. He was indeed very talented. I got a pretty good kick out of that last film he did, Hardly Working. I thought that was a decent film. Not his best, but not his worst. I thought that The Big Mouth is one I always enjoyed. Of course, The Nutty Professor, that's the kind of thing he showed some genius on. Other things where they call him genius, I look at that and just don't see it. But
I have some that are very heartwarming that I like of his. You're Never Too Young he's teamed up with Dean in that one. Where they're running from Raymond Burr. Who's a criminal. I really like The Geyser Boy. That is just such a heartwarming, cute story where he travels to Japan and just absolutely adores this little boy.
he did some wonderful ones in the 1950s, some black and white ones, one where he was a television repairman. I enjoyed that one. But in the 50s, he wasn't really – as full of himself as he became in the 60s.
Yeah. Once the 60s and 70s hit, that's it. He was... And who knows if that had something to do with him and Dino breaking up? Who knows?
It did so much for him. He did so much for others with his muscular dystrophy that he made a life, basically a lifetime a job of supporting and... even before he was a regular host, he was doing things for them. So it was.
We have when we had Erie House TV, we showed one of the old television shows with Dean Martin before the marathon started, and already Jerry was pitching people to pitch in and help out with muscular dystrophy.
Yeah, so that. That goes back. People say
here,
he did it.
I am the man with the bats on his hat. So we did hats. Next week we're doing bats. We're going batty.
We're going batty.
Right.
Yes, we
Saturday,
are.
Friday we got the Shadow House of Mystery. Saturday it's the return of CBS Radio Mystery Theater here on Erie House Radio. Thanks again for you folks listening and chatters, Fogsbane. GGSI Paper, thank you so much. We appreciate your patronage. And we'll see you next time here on Erie House.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone. Don't come alone.
Sorry, I rambled on. I thought we had too many minutes to we had too many minutes to fill there, so I just started rambling on about Jerry Lewis. Sorry.
No, that was perfect. We always go on sidebars. I don't have a problem with that. This was fun tonight, though, and I'm going to have a lot of fun with the bats next time.
Yeah, I hope it went over. I didn't get any reaction on Fogs or Gigi side paper over the history of the hat.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, if no one else did.
Poor
Ugg. Came to a bitter
end. Poor
Ugg!
I don't know why, I just... but he had a hat, yeah. But I don't know what it was.
We forgot to tell people to run over and listen to Gar. He's back up and running.
Yeah. But, I don't know what it was. Something just struck me this morning and said, you know what, I ought to do some day fact, hat fact, day fact. So I said, what would be a little bit more fun? Maybe the history of the hat. You know, and I
that was excellent.
Thought of a couple. What's that?
No, it was excellent. It was... I loved the history of the hat.
it was kind of fun going off on the poor Ugg, the inventor that never really was credited, for all those things.
Made him out of rocks. Great.
His first fashion show had three of his models broke their necks.
I had so much fun envisioning it. Radio truly is the theater of the mind, because you can make it as ridiculous as you want in your own head. It's awesome. Well, listeners in the archive, Dave and I aren't going to be around too long tonight. We're both dog tired. We've actually had to do manual labor today.
Yeah, what's with that? That's not my contract. Oh, wait, I got married. That's losing my contract.
That is the contract, yes. The never-ending honeydew list. Honeydew this, honeydew that.
Yeah. And actually, I have to go out and do another one before it gets dark yet. Hooray!
Yep. And sometimes we get to be like Wimpole and say, yes, dear. Yes. What have you called? Yes, sweetie pie. Sweetie pie says, I have to go and cut the lawn.
I did the trimming today. I'll maybe cut it tomorrow, depending on the weather. But now I've got to go out and cut some even sticks for something. Yeah.
Let me tell you, shoveling dirt, it was no fun either. But it makes for good glucose readings. So it wasn't all in vain. And I'll get some good vegetables too out of it.
There you go.
I hope so. All right, my man.
All right, my friend. You have a good Memorial Day weekend here, and we'll see you on the radio next week.
Right here.
And as always,
on Erie House. And you know what time it is?
Yep, it's time for Jimmy to say good night.
Good night. Good night. Good night. It's time to say good night. Good night. Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the day, and in cut think a do. Good night. Good night.
Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
And now
Now, folks, it's time to say goodnight. We sincerely appreciate your patronage and hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon. Good night.